Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stuart Thompson, and let me get this echo off here. Thank you. Good evening. Welcome to Personal Transformation. I'm broadcasting live from the Gatehouse at 3101 Lakeshore Boulevard West in Toronto. Old Etobicoke, as I always say. Well, it's a nice spring April showers night, pouring rain out here. The flowers are coming up. The grass is turning green. So brighter days ahead, folks. Brighter days ahead, aside from tonight. But, folks, it's going to be an interesting night tonight. I'm going to be talking about loss and grief. And there's an awful lot that's involved in that. So I'm going to cover many different things in regards to that. There's a lot of attachment to it as well. So I'm going to be covering a lot of stuff and talking about a lot of stuff. And your social interaction through Twitter is quite welcome. So please drop your comments, questions, whatever. And first off, I should point out, I'm not a therapist. I'm only here as a peer support. I'm only offering my own affirmations, and I'm not a therapist or anything of the sort, so please keep that in mind, or a psychologist or anything like that. I'm not a doctor or anything like that, so just please keep that in mind. And if you're at all triggered in any way from the conversation that I have tonight, so I would recommend you call, if you're in Canada or the U.S., I would recommend you call RAIN at 1-800-656-4674 or 656-HOPE. You will you'll have someone to talk to, or if you need to in an area, there must be a local hotline depending where you live and where you're listening. But for the folks in Canada and the U.S., here's a local call RAIN. And you know, it's funny. I usually have a list here in front of me for local numbers for anybody in the GTA. And actually, I just found it. So if you are in the Greater Toronto area, and you would like to speak to somebody because you feel triggered and you're feeling off because of the conversation. Well, first off, too, if you are feeling triggered and you're feeling upset, don't listen. Just turn the dial or turn it off, and you can come back and listen to it later on if you like or not. It's totally up to you. But if you're in the Greater Toronto area and you're feeling triggered and you need to talk to somebody, if you're in the downtown area, the Gerstein Center at 416-929-5200. If you are in the West End or Peel region, like Mississauga, Brampton, and Oakville, and Burlington, and so on, you can call 905-278-9036. And if you're in the York region, which is North Toronto, 905-310-2673. And if you're down the Eastern Corridor heading towards Ottawa, Montreal, Trenton, Cornwall, there's a 1-800 number you can call. Which is from Durham at 1-800-742-1890. And last but not least, if you're downtown Toronto, there's a stress number line you can call, 24 hours, all these numbers, 416-408-4357. So thank you, folks. If you're all triggered in any way from the conversation that I'm going to be having tonight about grief and loss regards to childhood sexual abuse, and you know what? You can expand off of that. I mean, like, even if you have a loss of a family member or something like that, I'm not saying all those feelings would be the same, but a lot of those feelings could be the same. And, you know, trying to understand and try to sort it out or process it is not an easy thing to do. But I have one little announcement I want to make, or a couple announcements anyway. Well, one to start off with anyway. We are having our annual seventh annual International Transforming Trauma Conference, which we're having this year at Humber College, South Campus. Other years we've had it at the Toronto Police College, which is not far away from here. But this year we're going to have it at the at Humber College South, and it will be Friday, June the 2nd, and there is a cost involved of $150, but if you're a student and you like a break in the cost, well, I'm sure if you talk with Maria, she might be able to help you out on that. But we have some great guests that are going to be there, and one of my guests I'm going to be having on the show May the 11th, from the Forgiveness Project, which I often talk about forgiveness, and I'm even going to talk about forgiveness a little bit tonight, but from the Forgiveness Project, Tara Muldoon, and she has a book, and if you have to read it, I'm going to read it, try to read it through the weekend, because she's going to be my guest here May the 11th, and I can't wait not to speak with her. I know they're having a gala that's coming next week, rather. I'll know, as I know more about it, I'll tell you about it, and I'll let you know what it's about, but more importantly, or rather, I'd rather her have her come in here and talk about it herself in person. And another person we're going to have as well, it would be Leonard Benoit. He's also a facilitator here at the Gatehouse, but he is a nurse, and he is representing the Six Nations. And Leonard Benoit will also be speaking on part of the Two-Spirited People of First Nations. And looking forward to hearing what that's all about. Another guest we'll be having as well will be Rob Hawkins, which I've had him, he's a psychotherapist. I've had him on here as well as a guest before. And again, I'm looking forward to what he has to say at the conference as well. Yours truly will be speaking as well. I'll be talking about social media and the connections that I've made, incredible, incredible connections that I've made through social media in regards to promoting and advocating about childhood sexual abuse. I mean, there's so many of them I can list off. I mean, I'm just going to list a few off just off the top of my head. I know I'm not going to list them all. So I know that when I finally get my blog finished and posted, I will certainly be having a big list of them up there. But like, for example, now on Monday nights, for example, we have the No More Shame Project, which is headed up by, how do you like that? I'm talking about it now, and I can't even remember names, and I've only talked about these people 1,000 times. But I'm thinking geez, what's wrong with me? Now I feel really, really silly, really, really silly. I can't even think of the name. But well, anyway, there's a No More Shame Project, and I'm sure someone will correct me and tell me, oh, my God, Stuart, what are you thinking about? Why can't I remember her name? Yes, but anyway, get back on track here. So on Mondays, we have the No More Shame Project, and originally it was by Bobby Parrish, which is not there no more, and she's taken a step backwards. And now we have Athena Moberg that's taken over, and she does it every Monday night from would be 8 o'clock, I guess would be Central Time. Sorry, 9 o'clock. Well, it would be 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, our time, and whatever time it is in the West Coast. And actually, Athena is broadcasting right from Hawaii. And forgive me for not remembering names, because I'm rambling on here so fast. Sometimes I have to slow down, stew, and just take a breath. And relax, and I get it right. So that's exactly what I've done. So starting off with, for example, we have the No More Shame Project, as I just mentioned. And on Tuesdays, we have Sexual Abuse Chat, and that is with Bobby Parrish and Rachel Thompson. Well, Bobby Parrish and Rachel Thompson, for example, on Twitter were the original people to do sexual chat, and that's been 3 years now. Kind of like my radio show. I've been doing this now for 3 years as well. Three years in May 23rd, if I'm not mistaken, 23rd, 24th. Same as those ladies as well. Now, there's also another chat as well, which I didn't mention as well, which is on Mondays, and I believe it's at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, our time, and I'm not too sure what it would be. They're 5-6 hours later in the U.K., and that is CSQ chat, and again, it is supporting survivors of childhood sexual abuse. So, in social media, those are the kind of things I'm going to be talking about at the 7th Annual International Conference for Trauma. And so important. Now, we have a couple other keynote speakers that are going to come along. They have not been announced yet, but I'll keep you up to date as it's going along. And, okay, I've already got a couple notes here already, and one from Living with Abuse. I guess looks like to try to pull the light out from the darkness, then we're living in hope, as there are always better ways for tomorrow. Right. Well, absolutely there is. And another comment from Flower Child, the grief is of never having a childhood is very difficult to overcome, much bitterness. Well, yeah, those are two definitely key elements that I can certainly relate to in many ways. But grief. Well, what is grief to most people? Well, grief is a multifaceted response to loss, particularly to loss of someone or something to which his bond was formed. Kind of like what I was talking about, like if you like, for example, if you have a, like a death, for example. Now, when we talk about it in childhood, I know I sometimes make reference to it as, well, I lost my childhood. So that's what I grieve about. So although conventionally focused on the emotional response to loss, is also has a physical, cognitive, behavioral, social, and psychological response to loss. It also has physical, cognitive, behavioral, social dimensions common to the human experience in the loss of something or someone dear to us. So it has many different effects on us going through this experience. And we can go many, many, many different ways. There's no right or wrong way to grieve. Keep that in mind. You know, everybody grieves in their own way. There's no documentation saying that you should grieve this way or that way. We all grieve in our own way. I know from my own experiences, one of the things I would do to grieve was I would basically isolate. I wouldn't, what I mean by isolate, I would isolate, dissociate, for example. You know, I'd be sitting someplace, for example, and I would start to dissociate, and I'd be off in la la land. And I would not even realize what I was doing. And actually, I remember probably about 7 years or six, well, it'd be 6 years ago, 7 years ago. And somebody pointed that out to me. I was sitting there, for example, by the water. I was down by a river. I sat there and I was off in la la land, and I didn't even realize I was dissociating, and I didn't even understand why. Well, I do now understand why. One of the reasons why I was dissociating, for example, I won't get into a long story, but why I was dissociating was because I was sitting down by the water, and unfortunately, in my past experience, one of my perpetrators, well, actually my very first perpetrator, what he used to do is he used to take me down by a river. And I never could figure out why I would dissociate when I went down by water. And a lot of times I would do that. And here I'm thinking, I'm just taking it all in. I love this, which I did. I really love the water and the freedom and, you know, the wildness. I just love all that. But what little did I realize whenever I would go into a place like that, especially like water, like even, it didn't even have to be a river, but although that's where my experiences were, I would disassociate. I would sit there with a blank look on my face and totally just shut the world off. That's what I would do. That's how I would cope, for example. Grief is a natural response to loss. It is emotionally suffering you feel when something or someone you love is taken away from you. You may associate grief with the death of a loved one, as I pointed out, but any loss can cause you grief, including, I'm going to give you a bunch of examples, not just including childhood sexual abuse. Well, it could be a relationship breakup, for example, a loss of your health, losing your job, losing the financial stability, a miscarriage, for example, a death of a pet, a loss of a cherished dream, for example, like maybe a job you wanted or something, for example, or a house you wanted to buy, you know, for example, a car you wanted, a loved one's serious illness, a loss of a friendship, a loss of safety after trauma, as I pointed out, you know, could be many different things. And another point, thank you, Flower Child. Grief is much worse where there were unsolved issues in a relationship. Yes, yes, that's, again, another point of grieving as well. There's so many different ways you can grieve from a loss, but I'm going to concentrate just on well, I'm not just going to talk, I'm going to kind of cover a wide range of different things here. Everyone grieves differently, and let me just check this one little thing here. Sorry. Okay. Yes. So everyone, grieving is a personal and a highly individual experience. How would you grieve depends on how many factors, including your personality, your coping style. I mean, personality is huge, and your coping style is really, really important as well. You know, like a lot of people, I mean, you could do anything to cope in many different ways, which I'll dive into as I'm going along here. Yeah, so how do you grieve on many factors, including your personality and coping style, as I pointed out, your experience, your faith, the nature of the loss, for example. The grieving process takes time. Healing happens gradually. It can't be forced or hurried. There's no normal or timetable for grieving. Some people start to feel better weeks or months, or for others, grieving process is measured in years. Whatever your grief experience, it's important to be patient with yourself and allow the process to naturally unfold. Some points here. The deep grief of an individual experiences follow the loss is normal, for example. Grief is a unique experience for every person, as I pointed out. Everyone carries within him or herself the capacity to heal. That is possible. Critical to healing process is having the access to a safe place to which freely express and explore grief in whatever way makes the sense to the person. Yeah, so like, well, my example for grieving, what I've been through, which I didn't even understand the whole part of the grieving process until I came here, was coming to the gatehouse. And I still come here to grieve my loss whenever I think about it, or at least now, even if I don't come here, at least I have better coping skills, for example. Through meditation, for example, which I'm going to talk about later on a little bit more anyway, but just throwing that out there as I'm talking about this as I'm going along. Well, what are the most common questions survivors of sexual abuse or sexual violence ask is, will the pain ever end? Well, from my experience, I can say that well, I still suffer in pain in a lot of ways, but I can say this though, from my experience, is that it does get better. Though I've worked really, really hard to try to change that. Like when I talk about pain, for example, like for myself, not just the memories, it's the body feeling you get. And I know some of you, even Flower Child, I really appreciate your comments on this. Same thing with you, Living Abuse, if you're listening. The body pain that you carry with this, and I know actually, Flower Child, we've talked about this before, because I know you're listening, about the pain that the trauma that we carry in our bodies many, many years after the effect. I mean, that's probably stuff that I'm probably carrying right now that I'm talking about that I know I'm still carrying with me. And it just comes out of nowhere. I have absolutely no control over it when it hits me. But I do have control over is how I can change that feeling that I have, that pain, that inner nastiness that I feel. And that's exactly what it is. It's nastiness. Very, very nasty. You know, to the point where if I'm not careful with my mind, for example, that pain that I'm feeling, I can fall back to addictions, for example, or to some kind of bad behavior if that pain comes and gets a hold of me. Now, I know some of you out there listening can really, really appreciate that. When you are dealing with the events of your past, the pain can seem overwhelming and never-ending. Survivors are left to cope with a lot of grief over what happened and what was lost. Will you ever get your life back? That's a really good question. Will you ever reclaim the old you or whatever the hell was the old you or whatever the hell was old me, for example? I don't know. This is the great thing about coming to the gatehouse is I've been able to figure that out. Well, I really did never really know the old me other than I was a child, for example. And in that childhood, I lost out a lot of things. So basically, I've made reference to this before. Well, when my abuse started between the ages of, I guess it would have been around the ages, between the ages of 6 and 7 is when it started. So when that started, my childhood stopped. Well, in my mind, it did anyway. A couple more points. Okay, again, thank you from Living with Abuse and Flower Child. Okay, grief was so much harder as some of us had to hide our grief having lived with a narc, for example. Well, that's another great example. Was so totally private, only with safe people. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Flower Child, when there has been sudden severing relationships, there can also be a lot of deep shock. Absolutely. Another point, yes, it's hard to control sometimes. Yes, living with abuse. And the pain from traumatic grief can cause people self-harm, self-destruction, and behaviors. Absolutely, which I'll be talking about as well. So, will you ever reclaim your old you, as I've been saying? Well, will you ever sleep without nightmares? Another great question. Or have a carefree day? The answer is yes, absolutely. There are a process of grieving that most survivors go through. And that's provided you get the help, of course, to do with this. I mean, I did not have any help until I came to the gatehouse. And that was how I was able to even recognize the fact that I had loss And I was grieving for what I lost as a child, mainly meaning my childhood, for example, and all the other things on top of that. Another point from living with abuse, our childhood is robbed from us. Are you so right? We aren't the same after that. Like death, grief becomes a part of who we are. Absolutely. And it holds on to us like a, it holds on to us like a wart, if I can be so blunt in saying so. Yes, so like I say, but there's a process, a grieving that most survivors go through. And it also help, it may also help to consider the stages of common sexual abuse survivors and all those experience grief. You may not experience all these stages. So these seven stages I'm going to talk about, you may not experience all of them, but you may experience some of them. Or maybe even none of them. I mean, like I said, everybody's individual. You may not experience all the stages that I pointed out, and you may not experience them in so much in the order that I'm going to talk about. You might even go back a stage or two as the new memories surface or deal with your emotions. However, it can help to identify where you are in the process of recovery and to see each stage not as a conclusion, but as a step in the journey of recovery. So these seven steps I'm going to read to you, again, like I can't emphasize enough that either you're going to relate to them or you've been through it, and you may not even go through this in a particular order. So I'm just reading them out to you, and you can decide how or if it doesn't affect you and go from there. So, for example, well, let's go to number one. Yes, I totally agree, and I'm going to talk about that too as well, Flower Child. Grief can trigger rage, and I've talked about that before. I'll talk about that a little bit more in depth as we go along. Well, here's number one of the seven stages that we talk about here at the Great House. Okay, shock and denial. Well, it can happen to me, for example. Well, I've met lots of people that were in denial, and I probably wasn't even in denial for a while myself, thinking that it was just a bad memory, for example, and or a bad nightmare, which I've had for many, many years, and which has gotten better, of course, as well. But at the same time, I probably denied it and didn't even realize it. After experiencing sexual violence or sexual abuse, there's such total confusion and disbelief that a person often goes numb. Kind of like the feeling I was talking about there, just with regards with myself there a minute ago. The mind-body system has to shut down. You know, when I talk about body trauma, it's also common for a survivor to deny that what happened was rape or abuse or downplay it. It wasn't so bad. Kind of those points I was talking about. You know, and I've heard this so many times, so many times. Never mind what I'm thinking about myself, but I've heard from other survivors many, many, many times. You know, it's a form of minimizing what happened to us, really is what it means, and or denial. And, you know, that never happened to me. Well, really, a little that I realized that was BS, of course, on that fact. Okay, so number two. Fear, panic, and shame. What do I do now? Once the shock wears off, you're no longer numb. There are some predictable next steps, such as profound anxiety, vulnerability. How will I survive this loss of innocence? The violation, the facing my friends and family, living my life again. There's a mounting sense of being out of control, which many survivors also evokes feelings of shame, inadequacy, and the lack of control, not surprisingly, can make the memory of sexual violence even worse. A survivor may feel like his or her life is over, like a spirit has died. The effects of sexual violence or childhood sexual abuse are long-lasting. Basically, when we talk about it, I know I've talked about basically they're my memory of this will probably be with me till the day I die. But it's the question of what I do with it is really key to help me survive, right? And this is what we're talking about. So that was number two. Now, okay, to the point you just made here about Flower Child about rage. Rage and or helplessness. How dare someone do this to me? Really, that would inflict rage pretty quickly. I know I can think of times I thought that too. Like, how could that son of a bee do this to me multiple times, and I had to shut up and not say a damn thing about it basically most of my life? You know, I've talked about rage and what I've had to do with my rage and how I've had to take control of it again. And I know with my rage, I had to go take martial arts because I needed self-control. I needed some kind of, I learned about meditation. I learned about a lot of other things, you know, not just being able to take care of myself defensively, but that wasn't what it was about, why I went there. I wanted to control my rage. Excuse me. So, often people in this phase swing between rage and profound sadness, which is so true. I can so relate. Both states can be induced by deep underlying vulnerability or helplessness. You've been wounded, feel exposed, and just want to lash out. Oh, I can so relate to that thinking back. Or you turn the rage inward turn the rage inward into depression, self-hatred. Now it's crawling under the covers of escapism or going through the emotions of living or even straining as hard as you can to remain victorious over your basic unworthiness. The battle of fear of failure and lurking dread of being sucked into the compelling back hole of helplessness. And that's kind of how I felt for the longest time. I know when I came here, that's what I was feeling until I got some help. Through the only person responsible for sexual violence is the perpetrator, many survivors are likely to over-attribute self-responsibility. That is to blame themselves for what happened. It is often easier to try to blame yourself than to understand why someone else would hurt another person the way you've been hurt. That's why the next phase, while often maddening, is also essential for moving through the grieving process. Another comment by Living With A View: shutting down is like protecting our brain from a further trauma. As children, blocking it out as we were too young to deal with it with sex at all. Absolutely. Great comment. And on to the next one. So, number four. Guilt and oblivion. Damned if you do or damned if you don't. Okay, just pick this out of the way. I'm kind of multitasking here at the same time, folks. Okay. The feelings and old voices of guilt and shame. Violating, compromising, internalizing core value or central part of your self-identity. Integrity and esteem can be louder and more incense. Self-directed rage keeps taunting you for shortcomings, unworthiness, etc. Many other things that it'll spill off onto. And ultimately can drain you emotionally, physically. It can cause a lot of things to, it's basically a great way of self-harm. It is at this stage that many survivors wonder if the pain will ever end. You might be part of a support group, engaged in therapy, journaling about your assault, but feel like nothing is helping. At this point, it is important to reach out and hold on to hope. It will get better. Well, I tend to agree with this statement because when I came here, I know I fought really, really hard to believe that there is hope. Well, I'm a prime example of hope. I'm sitting here talking to you right now about it after 6 years of trying to fix myself. at whatever degree was possible. And I talk about hope all the time. I mean, to me, I'm not going to get into a long speech about it, but hope is a hell of a lot better than rage, and it's a hell of a lot better than self-anger, and it's just so much more compelling. Finding hope and realizing that there is, you know, that there is a future. There was a future. There is a future for me because I worked really hard at it and wanting that future as it was denied to me, from what happened from my experience. Okay, another point from Flower Child. What are the losses? Believe life is good. And number two, that adults are trustworthy. Well, yeah, those are really, really good losses. You know, I can really relate to that. A lot of stress on the body and lowers immunity and disease and infection. Oh, yes. Another comment from Flower Child. You're absolutely right. It's kind of like what I was talking about. But thank you for pointing that out. Okay, number five, focused anger and letting go. Finding the good out from the bad. Well, that's really hard to believe when all you've really known is bad. And again, like what I'm reading here, keep this in mind now, not everyone's going to be in this particular order. I'm reading them off as these could be things we could be going through. So everyone that I've read here doesn't mean that you're going through this again. I must repeat this. Doesn't mean you're going through it. You could have went through it, or you might go through it, but doesn't mean that you're going through all these stages. And you might even go through only a couple of these stages. Who knows? Okay. So focus on anger, letting go. Find the good out of the bad. Well, that's a really hard thing to do. I had a really hard time swallowing that because I didn't really find a whole lot of good in anything. Mainly myself going through this process. To reach that powerful, purposeful, and passionate state of focused anger, a survivor must often blend rage and sadness. Some rage can propel us, out of the shocked, paralyzed, or oblivious state, yet must also face your sadness and loss and struggle with uncertainty and temporary uncontrollable aggression. To make yet sadder, wiser assessments and decisions, if you've worked hard to integrate the previous stages and then reward is focused anger. What happened to me was terrible and wrong, but there is another side. You're ready to loosen the knot of hurt and pain. You're ready to see that while you might never be the person you were before, you are now stronger, wiser, and capable of reclaiming your voice and your life. At this stage, survivors frequently start using their experiences to help others. For instance, speaking out or volunteering at a rape crisis center. Well, and I'm an example of that right here, right now. I'm talking about it now. This has been part of my healing. Yes, I've talked about what I did when I was a lot younger in regards to the martial arts, but really, my healing has been not so much that I'm telling my story all the time. I've said my story many, many, many times. And in fact, even if I was to say my story now, well, basically what happened to me is the same, but the outcome has changed. So, I know when we're in group, we ask the participants to write their story. And I know I've written my story a few times, and hell, I've even given my story to Deb Mayberry, which she put in her book. Well, I know that, yeah, the initial stuff that happened to me is the same, but my outcome now is totally different. Well, like, for example, me doing this Blog Talk Radio show, for example, all the public speaking I do. And let me be very clear, too, that when I go out and I public speak, and I've been really, really grateful and blessed that I've been able to do a lot of public speaking about this and advocate about this. And my speaking has allowed me to go into colleges and universities and talk about childhood sexual abuse, talk about forgiveness at a capacity that I'm able to allow, of course. And I'm not when I talk about forgiveness, I don't talk about forgiveness about others. And if I did, it would only be something that was said to me or something I've seen or something is mentioned to me. But I make reference to myself when I talk about forgiveness and what it means to me and how it applies to me and what I forgive and what I don't forgive. Like, for example, when we talk about forgiveness, well, now I'm going to be talking about forgiveness when we talk about loss and grief. I'll be talking about forgiveness, about forgiving yourself. I'm not even talking about who perpetrated you or who violated you. That's nothing to do with them. It's about forgiving yourself. And by being able to forgive yourself, well, a lot of these other things will come into play. Well, you know, I struggle really, really hard to come to some level of forgiveness for myself. You know, and I still struggle with that sometimes. I go back and forth like a yo-yo, back and forth all the time, back and forth all the time. You know, I forgive myself to whatever degree, and then I fall back and say, okay, well, you know, my self-worth is down the toilet again. Then I pull myself out of it again. I'm back and forth like a yo-yo, just like you're saying, just like I'm saying. What happened to me was terrible and wrong, but there's another side. You're ready to loosen the knot and hurt and pain, as I've stated. So, you know, being able to do that, as I've stated again here, took a lot of work on my part to be able to do that. And, you know, and I still struggle to this day. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm not perfectly healed, and nor do I profess that I am. But the only difference is that rage I talked about, that guilt, you know, that focused anger that I had towards myself, the helplessness, all those things are, you know, they're there, but they're not, you know, they don't own me like they used to own me, if I can put it in that term. A couple more comments here from Living with the Abuse and Fire Child. I really appreciate your input. Thank you both of you for participating like this. Okay. From Living with the Abuse first up, I must admit, as my family invalidated the victim abuse, the violence abuse. When I got angry or sad, I told influential people I grew up with, if that revenge, so be it. Oh, okay. I kind of think where I get what you're saying. Flower Child, being cared for by healthy people can go a long way too in healing. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I really agree with that. You know, being around healthy people like that, that's, you know, I know that in the survivor community here at the Gatehouse, I come in here and I was not healthy at all. I know the two facilitators, I should say, that helped me through my first 15 weeks, you know, to get me moving. I know that, well, they were great that way. I mean, talk about being positive people and healthy people and actually cared for me. And which would make it even harder for me when I came in here, although I let all that go when I came in here. I've made this comment before, sitting in here with a group of men, or there was 8 to 10 men in my group. Actually, there were 8 men in my group. And I don't trust men to begin with. And I didn't trust women in that time either to begin with, because I was violated on both sides. So it was very hard for me. But although at the same time that I went in there, angry and hurt as I was, and vulnerable too, I let myself be totally vulnerable, I had to let go. So in order for me to move forward, I had to be vulnerable around people that I was probably triggered by. Well, I was triggered by, as I just pointed out, and I needed. But that was probably one of the best. That was a great experience, and the bond that I reformed with those men in the group and the facilitators was. There's nothing that I could, nothing could describe that feeling whatsoever, because I never experienced anything like that. You know, not being able to trust men to begin with, and then going into a group of men, and then I'm not just the one being vulnerable. They're all being vulnerable too as well. They're just dumping it all on the table. You know, I'm talking about tears, everything, and you know, that was humbling in its own profound way as well. So here I am. I'm talking about this stuff. And you know, the great thing about it is that when I did talk about it amongst all these other men, and I mean, let me also include too, even in the future when I did co-ed groups, it was the same experience. But what I'm talking about now, being able to sit there, being vulnerable, and ever so humbling as it was and is now to me today, it was probably the best experience that I've ever had, because there I learned basically to have a voice. And that voice has allowed me to do what I'm doing here now, for example, and other things that have happened as well. Okay. Ken, a few more points. I really appreciate the stuff going back and forth. I must admit, from Living with Abuse, I must admit, as the family invalidated, I've already said that already. Okay, my mistake, sorry. Oh, yeah. Next one. It is good to have good support around us, for sure. I agree with Firechild, good comment. Yeah, I agree with that, too. And another point, more points here. Being part of a support group, taking to others, survivors, empowering too, sharing their abuse stories and healing. So helpful and highly recommended. Absolutely. Being vulnerable creates trust, so important for sharing stories. Absolutely. So what happened to me was terribly terrible and wrong. But there's another side. You are ready to loosen the knot of hurt again. Again, I can't say that. I can't say that enough. Two, what happened to us was wrong and can never be justified. We might even begin to see gifts that survival has given us. Well, I still have a hard time actually kind of swallowing it. Well, the only gifts that I can really see that I've got out of that is being able to do what I'm doing here. I've met some really, really good people. And as far as what happened to me, I cannot see that as a gift. I'm sorry, I just can't do that. But the part I can see as a gift is the healing that I've done, the community and the brotherhood, the sisterhood that I've gotten from other survivors that have been through this experience. And that is the gift that I've gotten out of this. Hope you can relate to as well like I can if you've had this experience that I'm talking about. I've met some just amazing, amazing people by coming here to the Gatehouse and even abroad now too, because all the different functions that I'm lucky enough to go and attend. And it's been so important as far as my healing process is concerned and continues to be. You know, I have this support is what I'm trying to say. And the support is here with me. And even after all this time, anybody who's come to the house, you know, you always have that support, even when you're done. Like, for example, like we have a drop-in now. We have a drop-in every Thursday, for example. So after you've done the programs, you can come in here and you still have support. You can call on the phone during the day, for heaven's sakes, and you can get support. You can get one-on-one support if you want after the fact. So there's all kinds of venues here at the Gatehouse that we offer to give you ongoing support. I don't like using this word maintenance, but support after you've done the programs. And I know that for myself, for example, I can't speak for others, but I know that through my healing experience, I've needed support throughout the whole process. Yes, I've done the 15-week program, the 16-week program. I've done many different things. But having support of others around here, not just facilitators, but the participants as well, is so vitally important for me still moving further. You know, I keep striving to get rid of that pain that I talk about. Maybe someday I will. You know, fact is, I know that when Deb Adams was in here, she talked about biofeedback. Well, I like to go and do that because I like to find out what's going on with myself. And fact is, I'd like to even get her to come in here and do that live. And I'm really seriously considering on doing that. So you folks can get an idea what it's all about if you don't understand. So I'm gonna ask Deb to come back again. I think that's exactly what I want to do, and I can explain to the process of what happens. But again, that's another program in the future. Okay. Yes, the gift of meeting truly excellent friends. I totally agree. Oh yeah, thank you, Living with Abuse. And okay, so we're on to number six. Again, I can't say this enough. All these things I'm talking about does not necessarily mean it applies to you. Maybe some of them do, some of them don't. But I know that for myself, all these seven stages, I can't say that. I think I've got a little piece of everything here. Some more than others, but I think I have a little piece of everything here in my experience of healing and going through the process of what happened to me. Exploration and a new identity or going from victim to survivor to thriver. Letting go is often unnerving. You've invested so much into simply surviving. You might feel like being a survivor is the only thing that defines you. Well, to that comment, I thought that for the longest time. I honestly don't believe that now. I honestly believe that I'm a thriver, or as I call myself on social media, I call myself a warrior. And I am, because I think about what I fought to get to where I am. There's no damn way. I mean, I'm a thriver warrior. There's no doubt about that. I think about how hard I fought to be where I am now. I'm a self-proclaimed warrior. That's all there is to it. Like it or not, that's what I call myself. But you are a thriver. I mean, if you can go through all that and be here today and talk about it to the level, at any level or any capacity, then you are definitely a thriver. There's no doubt about that. And it might, well, even a warrior if you choose to be, as I call myself. But at this stage, you've incorporated what happened into your life. It is not only who you are, but it's just part of who you are. You're likely to find that you think about what happened a lot less, for example, and feel a lot more like a stronger version of the old you. Well, you know, I must bring this point up too. Well, when I came in here, I didn't even know the old me. I never really knew who me was. And in this process of coming here, I had to rediscover, well, I guess that's kind of not completely true when I think about it, actually. I knew who I was, but it was all false, if I can say it that way. So basically, I had basically a false identity of myself, of who I believed who I was. So going through this process helped me define who I really am, who the real Stu is. And granted, I'm still discovering, but I've discovered so much, and it's allowed me to do so much, you know, and so many, many different things. And I keep moving forward. So I'm thriving along the way here completely. And I've met many others that have gone through the same experiences, and they're doing the exact same thing. So it is possible. There is hope. There is a future. You know, what more can I say about that? But anyway, this vulnerable yet fluid state provides unprecedented opportunities to get to know yourself, to assess the true individuality, the strengths and weaknesses, and not only as it relates to sexual abuse or sexual violence. Now is the time for a full-scale person in situation life inventory. How healthy or toxic are seemingly vital relationships and friendships, for example? I'd be asking yourself. You know, I know I had to ask myself that. You know, I had to let some relationships go because they were very, very toxic. And in order for me to move forward, because I felt like I was being taken advantage of, for example, as one example. So what about your health? That's another thing to consider. During this transitional window, you do dysfunctional coping patterns, habits of drinking, smoking, drugging, eating, lack of exercise, limited socializing, or spiritual support need to be challenged. What do you need to truly move forward? So I had to ask myself these questions. What do I need to move forward? Well, what do I need to change? You know, all those things that I've mentioned, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that that all these things I've mentioned pertains to you, but maybe some of them do. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But I'm just putting it out there that these are some things that could potentially be part of who you are right now, and you could change, as I've done for myself. Okay. Now, number 7, acceptance. Well, submerging yourself in the stages of grief for a time will feel hellish. It sure as hell is. There's truly is an opportunity for rebirth. Getting out of a black box is a distinct possibility if you can ride on and ride out of this actually emotional, this acutely emotional learning roller coaster The grief encounter is definitely more than a learning curve. And there is no absolute or fixed period of time for your movement to go through these stages, as I pointed out in the beginning. The most important thing we can do while healing and grieving is to take time to gradually recover and discover, as I've talked about. Who am I, for example? What generally feels like me? What works for me and my family? What seems to be kindle or rekindle my passion? So finding and discovering new things for yourself, because you've had to get rid of old things, is all the beautiful part of this process. Like getting rid of the old bad habits of self-harm, for example. Ending relationships that are one-sided, for example. And, those are just a couple of things. Remember, there's real difference between feeling sorry for yourself and feeling your sorrow. When you're feeling sorry for yourself, you are mostly blaming others. When you are feeling sorrow, you are demonstrating the courage to face your fears of pain. There are poignant moments in your life. We all must take the time to embrace our sorrow. So those are the seven steps. Again, like I say, they may reflect you, they may reflect upon you, they may not. You need to decide that for yourself. And you need to, you can dissect it to whatever way you want to. And hopefully you have the capacity and the resources to help you through this process. It's not an easy thing to go through. From speaking from experience, it's taken me a lot of years to be where I am now, and it's just not been an easy experience. It just hasn't been. Well, I've had my good days, I've had my bad days, and I probably will still keep having them. But the difference is, for all my 100 steps forward and all my steps backwards, even if I've had to step back all the way, to 10 or something like that, and I've had to crawl back up to 100, I know that my steps going forward and my steps falling backwards are so different from what they were years ago. So like today, for example, if I was to put it on some kind of scale as I'm saying to you now, that while I may be at 100 and tomorrow I may fall back to 80, but by the end of that day that I'm talking about, I'm back up to 100. All in how I've learned to cope with things and how I've learned to, when I am triggered or I'm having a difficult day, whether it's self-talk to myself or I talk to somebody at the gatehouse or some other friend that I have that trust upon, that I'm able to do that, then that helps me get back up to 100 again. Finding these glitches or these points that I'm talking about through your process of healing is so important to help you remember moving forward. Finding things that work for you. Now, one thing I've talked about many, many times is you may need to try many different things. And I've seen especially if you deal with severe anxieties, you may need to find many different forms of ways of coping so that you can stay, kind of like in between 80 and 100, as I pointed out, and hopefully you don't fall back below that or even to 50. But being able to crawl yourself back up to 100, it's just not, you need good coping mechanisms, or you need good, you need to find something that works for you, even if it means trying a different bunch of different things. Like I talked about meditation, for example. Finding good grounding techniques that work for you. And you may need to find many different ones, everything from drawing to journaling, for example, while your therapist, a really good friend. I mean, there's many different things you can do to help bring yourself back down to that 100 I'm talking about. But this is the beauty of the healing process, is discovering these things. And it takes a lot of time, and you're not going to figure this out overnight. It may take you weeks. It may take you months. It may even take you years, depending on on severity of your trauma that you've experienced. And, you know, severity of your trauma, you know, and or also depending on how hard you are. Like I always call myself a hard ass, for example. You know, I've lived with this for so long, and now just because somebody's trying to show me a better way, well, okay, I believe them, but I don't believe that for myself. So that's something I had to learn to do for myself, is I had to learn to believe that, yeah, you know, what was done to me was bad and wrong. There's no doubt about that. And it disgusts me to no end. But I can move forward knowing that, well, for example, that it was never my fault, for example. I was a child. I had absolutely no control, for example. And then, you know, then when I talk about holding on, well, you know, like being stuck with that trauma for a lot of years, I know for myself I can't use others for example. I can't talk about others, but for myself, I know I talk about being a hard ass. As I pointed out, it's really hard for me to believe that, I guess is what I'm trying to get at. And because I believed the nonsense things for so long, that yes, I believe what the person telling me that I can move forward, but I believed it, but I didn't believe it. If that makes sense, you know. And the thing is though that I've downplayed myself for so many years, in the fact that I didn't believe that I was worthy, for example, of anything better. So therefore, I would constantly beat myself down, even when it was right there in front of me. I would not believe that that was actually something good happening to me. That I had something that either I've earned or that I've worked for, or whatever the case may be. I never really believed it. Even if it was right in front of my face, I just thought it was more BS, because I've seen it so many times and I really did not believe it. So here I am. I have false beliefs on something that's right here in my face. So I struggle really, really hard. Even to this day, I'll dive back to that not worthiness stuff. I know it's BS. But yet I fall back on that. But the only difference is now today, when I do that, when I fall back to that non-worthiness sort of feeling, which I'm talking about, which I know a lot of you can relate to, is that I can pull myself out of it a lot quicker than I used to. Let's say 5 years ago or 3 years ago, for example, where let's say 3 years ago, what I would do, or even 2 years ago, for example, still even coming here, I'd fall into that non-worthiness thing, and I'd be stuck on that for days. Literally, I would be, or a day, for example. Coming to the house prior to that, I'd be stuck with that feeling for weeks, actually days, forever. That's what it seemed like. But that was the beauty about coming here and understanding some of these things that I've learned, is that now that that feeling of worthlessness that I've talked about, I still get it, but it doesn't stay with me that long, because I know it's BS. And it's just a false thought that was put on by myself, well, actually from what happened to me, as you know. And it's much easier to blame myself for all the things that happened to me and what I've done myself than to believe that, as I pointed out earlier, that I was a child and I had no control over it. Okay, moving on. Well, let's talk about spiritual grief process. Okay, so one way to stop reacting out of your inner child is to release a stored emotional energy from our childhoods by doing grief work that will heal our wounds. The only effective long-term way to clear out emotional process is to clear the inner channel of truth, which exists in all of us, is to grieve the wounds and the losses which we suffered as children and continue to suffer as adults. An important tool, a tool which may be vital to changing behavior patterns and attitudes in this healing transformation, is the grieving process. We are all carrying around repressed pain, terror, shame, rage, energy from our childhoods. Whether it was 20 years ago or 50 years ago, as I pointed out for myself, we all have this grief energy within us, even if we came from a relatively healthy family, because this society is emotionally dishonest and dysfunctional. How true that is. In order to do inner child work, we need to be willing to do the grief work. Emotions are energy, and energy needs to be released. Maybe through crying and raging, we need to own our feelings about what happened to us. We need to own our right to be angry that our needs were not met. Well, you know, I've often talked about anger. I've done segments on anger here, and we have a right to be angry. It's just what we do with our anger. It's that's important. Grief is an energy that needs to be released. We need to give ourselves permission to feel our pain, our sadness, our rage. We need to own and honor the feelings. Part of the grief work simply owns the sadness and the anger. We need to own the grief about what happened to us as children. And then we also need to own the grief over with the effect it had on us as an adult. It is when we start understanding the cause and the effect of the relationship between what happened to the child that we were and the effect it had on the adult we become that we can truly start to forgive ourselves. It is only when we start understanding and on an emotional level, on a gut level, that we are powerless to do anything differently that we did or truly start to love ourselves. The deep grieving work is energy work. Once we get out of our heads and start paying attention to what is happening in our body, then we can start releasing that emotional energy. Own your voice, own your child's voice. For some, grieving may take this form. When we get to the place of emotions, that emotions are coming up, when the voice starts breaking, remember to keep breathing. We automatically stop breathing and close our throats and our feelings when we get close to the surface. Yeah, so when that pain comes up, that's basically what happens to us. You know, like I don't breathe for myself. I just emotionally shut down. My numbness consumes me, and that's all I see. That's all I feel. That's just me. That's what I'm feeling. Feeling and actually living. Is what happens. At that point, a technique is to locate where the energy is concentrated in the body. It can be any place from the head to the feet. Much of the time, it is in our back because that is where we carry stuff. Carry stuff we didn't want to look at, or in the area of the solar plexus, anger, or fear, or the heart chakra. Pain, broken heart, or the chest sadness. The individual breathes directly into that place, visualizing a white light into the part of the body that starts breaking up the energy and little pieces of energy that starts being released. These balls of energy are sobs, for example. This is a terrifying place to be for the ego because it feels out of control. It is a wonderful place to be from healing perspective, but empowering, snot from the nose, all forms of energy being released. You can also witness watching yourself and controlling the process at the same time you are in pain and releasing it. So we often talk about that here, really it is. It's about releasing that and by crying or sobbing and, you know, having a nose full of snot. It's horrible sounding, but that's the truth of it. And being able to do that. By controlling the process, you're choosing to align yourself with the energy flow. By surrendering to the flow, instead of shutting it down, as terrified ego wants you to do, it is very hard learning process with a safe place to do it. So if you're able to do it, you need to find somebody safe to do this with. You know, really, if you're going to talk about it any or deal with it at any level, I would recommend it. I mean, if you can be with somebody by doing this, you know, when you think about it, excuse me, you're sobbing and you're emotionally, what you're doing is you're emotionally, you're just letting yourself go. And when doing so, you're releasing all that stuff that's inside you. Once you've learned how to do it, then it is possible to facilitate your own grieving process. So, but I still recommend that if you can do it, try to do it with somebody. I mean, everybody's different, obviously. And if you're able to find somebody that you can trust, that you can do this with, I really recommend it's better to do it with somebody than doing it by yourself. And it can be, you know, it can be very, it can be very helpful for yourself in letting this pain go, which we're talking about, or the grief rather. Okay, well, we've talked lots about grief. Let's talk a little bit about the losses now, or at least identifying the losses anyway. In the process of telling your story or in exploring your emotions, you may have already identified the losses that result from the abuse. These may include the losses of connections with family members or friends, opportunity to parent or grandparent, for example, spirituality, feeling far away or anger towards God, which I can totally relate to, relationship with your partner, self-esteem or having a low opinion of yourself, no self-worth, dreams and goals or visions of your life. The losses you've experienced are experiencing as the result of a child abuse are real. Minimizing or denying, as I've spoken about earlier, then will only slow down the healing process. Identifying, acknowledging these losses is an important step towards healing. All thought, this is a difficult step. You may feel a certain amount of relief when you are able to put the name to the losses you experience. After you've identified and acknowledged your losses, deciding to accept and resolve them is even the next step. Decision to accept and resolve the losses you've identified above is a decision to grieve them, and the decision to grieve your losses is a decision to feel pain. So basically, you're allowing yourself to feel pain. Our culture minimizes grief either by denying it or promoting quick ways to deal with it. Neither of these strategies work because not only is grief real, but it is a process. Masking the reality of grief and the pain does not alleviate the suffering you've experienced. Your losses are real. Your grief is real. Your pain is real. Your ability to move through grieving process and the experience healing is equally real. So all those thoughts, all those feelings that you're thinking and feeling, including the healing part, you feel it all completely, right through your body. You know, not just your body, but your brain as well. The grief process rarely moves into linear fashion. Grief tends to move in cycles, alternatively intensifying and diminishing. Each person works through their grief process differently, as I pointed out, some more quickly than others. The intensity of feeling also varies from person to person. People who have the support of family and friends are often able to move through this process of dealing with the reality of grief and loss. However, family and friends aren't always willing to be able to help lend their support to someone of experiencing grief. There are also times when people get stuck somewhere in the grief cycle and find themselves unable to complete the process. This is the aid of a trained counselor or support group is recommended, so like the Gatehouse or a psychotherapist, if you know one that can help you through this. So that's why I've been saying through our program here tonight, that if you can do this process with a friend or somebody you care about, especially the sobbing part, where you're really, you know, where you're dealing with this on a deeply emotional level and you're feeling this stuff, I really recommend you're with somebody that you can do this, that you trust, that you can go through this. As you move through the grieving process, it will be helpful for you to gather support from others, as I pointed out. To be patient with yourself, that's really, really key too. You really need to be patient with yourself because this is very time-consuming. To give yourself time and space through the process, to understand that each person's journey is unique, and to know that the pain will diminish over time, as I've, again, another thing, a point that I pointed out. Okay. Now we've talked about accepting your loss. Now let's talk about anger work, because we've talked a little bit about anger through this process, anger and rage. Now let's talk a little bit more about that. There's also energy flow process. This is the process that a bat, for example, or a tennis racket, pillow, whatever, is lifted over the head as you inhale. And there is, and as you hit the pillow, you expel that energy and shout or grunt or, you know, I can even use the FU example and scream, you know, whatever makes you feel good to release that energy. Whatever words come out of you, inhale, exhale, open your throat and say whatever needs to be said. It doesn't really matter what you say. Just get it out of your body, really. You know, if it's just cuss words, because that's what you feel that makes you feel better, let her go. Don't hold back. That's all I have to say to that. Because really, when you think about how angry you are for what was done with you, I can't speak for you, but I know how angry I was. I've done nothing but talk about how angry I was and how the rage affected me and what I've had to do to get some kind of control of it. So you know that anger is there. It's just what you do with it. And if you're able to find a friend, for example, and find a healthy way of doing it, then that's the best way to do it. It's virtually important for us to own our right to be angry. As I pointed out, about what happened to us or about the ways you were deprived. If you do not own our right to be angry about what happened in childhood, it greatly impairs our ability to set our boundaries as an adult. So by defining, like I'm talking about, by defining those feelings and thoughts of anger with your grief and loss, it's so vitally important, because I know for myself, as I pointed out lots, that I had a deep-seated root of anger and rage inside me. And I still do have a certain amount of anger that I carry with me as well. Just I choose to deal with it another, or rather I choose to show it another way, such as what I'm doing now. This is my way of dealing with my anger. This way I don't get in trouble too as well. I talk about it. So that's my way of dealing with the anger. I really don't want to be in that spot. I don't want to be angry and full of rage like I used to be. It's not a good feeling, and it makes me very scared of what I could do to myself. I don't think I would never hurt anybody, but I was more scared about what I would do to myself in my rage. We need to own and release our anger and our rage at our abusers, our parents, our teachers, our ministers, or authority figures, including the concept of God that we may have believed in while we were growing up. We do not necessarily need to vent that anger directly to them, but we need to release the energy. We need to let that child inside us scream, "I hate you, I hate you," while you beat on the pillows or something such, or some such thing, because that is how a child experiences anger. For some, the anger work will need to come before the grief work, and that's absolutely right. You need to, I needed to do my anger work, and actually I kind of did my anger work before coming in here, so that was very, very helpful. Okay, so living with abuse, you pointed out, it's a pretty mellow way of dealing with anger and healthy way to, you're absolutely right. I mean, this way you're not hurting anybody, you're not hurting yourself. It's much easier to scream into a pillow and I bang on a pillow than to bang on a wall with your fists, for example, or on a brick wall, which I've done in the past, for example, and my anger, and then I didn't even know why I was doing that, but nevertheless, that's what I would do. But yeah, if you can scream in the pillow or beat on the pillow, it's much safer for you and more importantly for you and anybody else around you is to do that. Hopefully no one's around you when you are releasing that angry, or if they are, at least hopefully they understand understand and will support you as you're doing it. Okay. I've talked about anger, and anger is nasty. Now let's talk about forgiving, which is even more nasty, but I'm more focused on about forgiving towards yourself and not about the people who did this to you or your perpetrators. You know, forgiving yourself is a really hard thing to do too. Never mind the thought of forgiving your perpetrators. I know that if I was to think about forgiving my perpetrators, well, that would bring me into rage without a second thought. Well, definitely won't bring me into rage now. Now I just get angry and think that's just BS. Why the hell would I do that? I have absolutely no reason to forgive them. This is my deductive reasoning when I talk about forgiveness. I have no reason to forgive them because I've done nothing wrong. It was them that did wrong, for example. So why would I need to forgive them? I'm more concerned about forgiving myself for what they have put on me and how they groomed me to, like, for example, for keeping my mouth shut for all these years. And, I mean, of course, society and all that doesn't help either as well. But nevertheless, I had to learn to forgive myself to whatever level I was able to or whatever capacity I was able to do. And I have. I've come a long way. I can't say that I'm I have my days where I'm not so forgiving towards myself. But with the hard work that I've done here at the Gatehouse and even outside the Gatehouse in regards to my anger, as I've talked about, so I can have a certain level of forgiveness towards myself. It took an awful lot of work. So you need, for people who have been abused as children, often balk about at the thought that forgiving their abuser. Well, few abusers, if any, deserve forgiveness, in my opinion. And I they're accountable for what they've done. And they should be accountable right to the end. So there's no excuse whatsoever for violating a child that's totally defenseless, that not only that, but not only the child, but it's not like a child can give you permission to touch them. They're a child, they're not an adult. It's pretty simple deductive reasoning as far as I'm concerned. To me, it's just picking on somebody vulnerable for your desires that are out of control. Forgiveness is a key to letting go of the past and embracing a brighter future. Forgiveness is a gift you give yourself, and that's basically what it is. You're giving yourself a gift to forgive yourself. You know, you're not the abuser. You do not even need to know your abuser's participation in this process, because forgiveness is about you, not about him or her. Here's how you may be able to forgive your abusers. Well, again, it's your choice, whether you do or whether you don't. I have chosen not to, and I probably never will. But on the other hand, my focus is on forgiving myself and moving forward. Because if I choose to think about my abusers, then they are still part of my life. Well, in essence, they probably are, because here I am talking about it now. But the point being is they're not in my forethought every day. And I can think about me versus think about them. And I can think about moving forward versus about thinking them. And yes, I think they'll always be there. There's no doubt they've taken a piece of my heart, and they'll always have it. But the only difference is I don't have to forgive them, and I hate using this word, nor should I. I don't like using the word should, because I just don't, and we don't use it around here anyway. But I know I is really what I'm saying is I have no need to forgive them. I don't have to. I choose not to. It's my decision. If you choose to, I've heard people that I have, well, it's totally their choice, and I draw no judgment towards them whatsoever. If it makes them feel better and it helps them heal, then to me that's all that matters. At whatever level or whatever capacity they're able to do that, to me that's all important. All I'm saying is that perpetrators, for example, they're accountable for what they've done, and it's wrong. There's no excuse or their so-called deductive reasoning at whatever level could possibly convince me to believe that this is all right at any level. You know, if anything, you know, you talk about anger and rage, that's all that'll bring that up in me. That's what it would do to me. It just bring up anger and rage. Okay, well, here are some steps. Again, it needs to be of your choice and not being influenced by somebody or anything like that of the sort. So, you need a strong desire to heal and heal patients. Recognize the cost of staying bitter. So, I know, speaking for myself, that I was bitter for many, many, many years. It wasn't until I came here that I realized that I need to let that go. Well, I spent so much time being bitter about my abusers and what they've done to me, that it basically, you know, it took away a good part of my life. And I had, I didn't know any better, so therefore I had absolutely no control of it. You feel your bitterness by thinking about your abuser and the ways that he or she damaged your life. This keeps your focus on your past rather than on your present. Staying bitter keeps you mentally connected with the person you do not want in your life. Number two, decide that you want to heal. Ask yourself if you are ready to do that, what it takes to sever that connection with your abuser, so you can feel yourself from your past. Number three, choose to think about positive things. Each time your abuser crosses your mind, choose to think about something that makes you feel happy instead of something else. Choose to channel your mental energy towards something that brings you joy rather than sorrow. Number four, the process painful emotions as they arise. You do not have to ignore your pain to forgive. Keep your focus on healing your pain instead of hating your abuser. And it's kind of like what I was just talking about. Number five, become indifferent to your abuser. As you stop investing your mental energy into hating your abuser, you will find yourself becoming indifferent to him. While most people think of hate as an opposite to love, the true opposite is indifference. And those are so true words. You know, I carried so much hatred in myself for so long. You know, I had hatred towards everything, everybody, my abusers, my parents for not, and my father, for heaven's sakes, for not being able to protect me. Big tough man like he was, and he couldn't protect me. Well, then on the other hand, he was never around, so how could he protect me? But that's the kind of hatred I would carry. And maybe you can relate to that. I'm sure you can at some level or way from your experiences. But nevertheless, that's the type of hatred I carried. And then made it even worse was the hatred towards myself. So that really made it hard to move forward at any level whatsoever. It was easier to stay hating myself, not having no self-worth, thinking that, you know, that, well, I always believed that my abusers, were kind of right in some ways, I always believed, I guess, I mean, I can't really remember exactly what said that in that aspect I was trying to get to, but I always believed that I wasn't worthy of anything or anybody, and those were always false beliefs, is my point, I guess I'm trying to get at. And really, those are just stuff that I heard from my abusers or my grooming, where I had to keep my mouth shut. And being brought up being a baby boomer, we were basically brought up to keep our mouth shut. And being a man made it even worse, you know. So being able to even talk about this was virtually impossible. If you did talk about it, I know that growing up hearing about this, never heard about this whatsoever. And if I did, it was swept under the carpet so fast that it would never get anywhere. It would basically come to a dead end, because not only did people not know how to deal with it, but society, more importantly, did not know how to deal with it at any capacity. So now, here's a few tips and suggestions of, you know, how to begin to start forgiveness. You know, and again, this is all your choice. Like it was my choice, and anybody else has come through the gatehouse. You have to decide that you're worthy to have some kind of forgiveness towards yourself. And I'm not saying it's going to be easy to do this, but going through this process of the grief and loss, you know, allowing you to do these things, and especially the anger, as we pointed out, I know I need to deal with anger, at a really, really good level. And I know that if I hadn't dealt with it to the level that I did before coming to the house, I probably, I would be, I don't know. I probably would have had a harder time with him. Don't get me wrong. I still had anger. It's just, and I had to deal with it in other ways, but it wasn't rage like I talked about, which I've talked about many, many, many times. Rage can have overwhelming, when that rage kicks in, like, you know, like anger, it's a secondary emotion, right? And actually, I call it the third emotion of the evil that I feel. And then when that rage kicked in, it was just so nasty, you know? It's hard really to put words to what to that rage, what it did to me. But, you know, when I think about some of the things I did to myself, you know, out of that rage, I'm talking about harmful things towards myself, which I won't get into right now, but nevertheless, that's where I was. But anyway, here's some tips and suggestions that you can, you know, that you can start with. I'm not saying you should do this. It's your choice. It's always your choice. You know, we're just putting it out there. If you want to do this, and at least try it, and you may have to do it a couple dozen times for it to work and make it work, and where you start to see a difference, as I've had to do for myself, then you'll see that it does work to a certain level, depending on the individual. In the term of forgiveness, it is a stumbling block, totally a total stumbling block. Think of the process of letting go of your bitterness, as I pointed out a little bit earlier. Another point, forgiveness is not a one-time choice, but a series of choices that redirects your focus away from your past, as I've been talking about all the way through this. Another point, forgiveness is not the same thing as a pardon. So again, if the other person has not harmed you, there would be no need to forgive. Well, if the other person has harmed you, well, again, it's not about forgiving the person that harmed you. It's about forgiving yourself. So you are number one, and you can stay bitter and anger at your perpetrator. But again, that doesn't help you. But if your anger, your bitterness is towards you, that makes it even worse, as I've been talking about. So if you can find a way to let some of that bitterness go, then that'll help you with your anger, for example. As it did with me, I let some of that bitterness go because I keep falling back and saying, well, you know, this happened to me and this is what I'm doing. And, you know, it was just a merry-go-round that never stopped. Never stopped until I made it stop. And until I redirected those thoughts, that's when I noticed a change. Reconciliation is not required to forgive. Your abuser does not even need to know that you've chosen to let go of your bitterness. Again, there's nothing to do with your perpetrator. Another point, finding a qualified therapist with experience in counseling with people with your abuse history is an important part of healing from your childhood abuse. Your therapist can help you work through the process of forgiving your abuser. It doesn't even have to be a therapist. It could be peer support as well. As long as this person understands and has the empathy and the capacity to let you find your voice, because this is what it's really about, is about allowing you to talk about this stuff at whatever level, you know, that you're able to do. And now over a period of time, as you more you talk about it, you'll find that, well, and some of you if anybody you're listening to this that hasn't dealt with this at any level, I'm telling you that by talking about your story, for example, over a period of time and saying your story over, like as I have many times, well, yes, it's still hurtful. But the only difference is now that when I do talk about it, that hurt, that rage, that anger that I keep talking about does not come into play at a level where it basically controls me, where I'm uncontrollable, both in my words and in my emotions, my thoughts, whatever, where I can't even control myself, where I have no control over what I'm thinking and saying, where it's basically out of control. With forgiveness, your victim identity dissolves and your true power emerges, the power of presence, instead of blaming the darkness you bring into the light. And that is a quote by Eckhart Tolle. So, I'm going to talk about some self-care now. Now that we've gone through this, that you can apply to yourself. In order to take yourself, especially about this, especially with some of the stuff I know is very, very triggering for some. And but here's some self-care things to get you through what I've talked about. And even if it didn't trigger you, try to remember for in the future that maybe you can apply it to yourself. I mean, you can find other things online if you have that at your hands. And but here's some choices you can take. Well, for example, tonight, when you go home or when I go home, I'll remember to practice the following. I can do many things to bring myself back down and to ground myself again. Well, such as reading a book, talk with a partner or a family member, for example, or a really good friend. Eat a really good meal. You know, recognize that you're hungry. I know that when I leave here at night, for example, I am really, really hungry. And that's the first thing I do when I leave here. I grab myself a really nice cup of coffee, which I love. And I usually grab some food. And that is my comfort, if I can put it that way. And that helps bring me back down. And hopefully I try to stay away from the bad food, of course, such as greasy foods and, you know, as for example. Well, a decent sleep, for example. If I really feel triggered, I might want to journal, which I really don't do a whole lot of journaling. I prefer to talk about it as I am now. Go home or to some other safe place, like, if it's in the daytime, or, you know, go to a place that you feel safe, like a park, for example, that you might feel comfortable with. Listen to music. Take a hot bath. Or some other thing that makes you feel really, really, really good about what, you know, something that you know that makes you feel good. You know, there's many things I didn't mention on here, you know, even if it's, a puzzle, for example. There's many things you can do, many, many, many different things you can do. In order to take care of myself out of this world, tomorrow when I get up and to meet other people, I go to work or go to school to keep appointments, or what are some of the things I'm capable of doing tomorrow when I wake up, so I don't fall back into that anger, rage, and feeling of the loss and the grief. What are some things I can do to keep me grounded? Well, what can I do? I often talk about how I know in the beginning when I came here that I would, what I would do, for example, to help myself be grounded for my self-care, really, really helped me was I had an animate object in my pocket. So basically what I picked up a stone from the water, you know, and it's funny because, you know, here I'm talking about how I used to get triggered. And yet I still find beauty in going out to the water, even though I was abused lots out by the water. And it was a hiding spot that my abuser used to take me to. And yet where I talked about where I would disassociate, where I would go out, someone pointed this out to me in the beginning of the program, I was talking about this, where I'd go by the water and I would sit there and I would just go off in a blank. But yet I've by going back to that, I was able to find like a beautiful stone, for example. And I found comfort in that because I see the beauty in the water and the stone and the natural, you know, how natural it is and it's supposed to be there. It's free and it's wild and, you know, whatever I might be thinking at the time. So I have that animate object in my pocket, for example, to remind myself even in the following day after coming from a night of being here. This is even before I started becoming, before I became a facilitator. We need to do that, you know, figure out my wants, you know, even if it means writing a list, you know, things I wanted to do to stay healthy for the day, you know, self-affirmation. I mean, you can do many, many different things. I mean, these are very hard things to learn to do for yourself, but it is possible. And once you get into the habit of doing it and this was never for me. And I love this, what Matt talked about from surviving my past. You talk about self-affirmations, and I've talked about this as well, and I love the way Matt talks about it, and I agree with him, and I know other people that do this as well. Well, some people, like for self-affirmation, for example, they would, this is still a good idea, don't get me wrong, it just didn't work for me, and it didn't work for Matt. But what we would do, for example, I couldn't write on my mirror in the morning telling myself that I'm a good person, for example. No, I can't do that. I can't write it out. I have to physically say it verbally, You know, I can remember to say it, but believing it is another story. So I'd have to say that to myself. Not that I believe me. Trust me when I say this. Is I did not say this to myself every day. I had to, in order for me to find the good in myself, I had to just do it, right? And by doing so, that allowed me to figure out things or to process things. But I could not write little notes to my little post-its telling me that I'm a good person. It just, that just doesn't work for me. That, to me, that's just too much. It just didn't work for me. But it works for people. And don't get me wrong, if that works for you, I really recommend you do that. But I'm just saying, if it didn't work for me, I know for Matt, for example, it didn't work for him as well. My thing of making it work was just doing it. And as I more I did it, the better I got at it, and the more I believed it. And that's the trick, is believing it. If you believe it, then it is possible to process this stuff and to believe that you are not as bad as a person you think you are, as we've talked about through the evening. Yeah, so like, for example, if you find something like affirmation, for example, try it for 4 or 5 days, right? And see if it actually does anything. But if you do, you got, like, a lot of our experiences, like we think that we think about ourselves, everything's all very repetitive, right? You know, every day we think that we're worthless, for example, then we're gonna believe that. But if you self-affirmate yourself and start telling yourself that you're actually a good person, well, over a period of time, you will physically, not just mentally, but you will physically believe that. And that's part of what it is physically believing that. Yes, there's a certain amount of in your head that you have to get it as well, but it's your body that's telling you, in my experience anyway, and what I've heard from others, that tells me that, no, you're not worthy, and you're not worthy of better health. You're not worthy of better things in life. But by doing these things, like I'm talking about, by like self-affirmation, for example, and telling yourself that you're not the person that your perpetrator told you are, then you will eventually, you will start to believe, your body will believe, your mind will believe that you are that person you're talking about. You know, and which is also important too, as well. You have a friend or something you can talk to, or a resource that you can reach out to, that even if you are telling yourself these things and you're not really believing it, that you can reach, even if you call a 24-hour helpline, for example. Well, I live here in the Greater Toronto Area, so I have the Gatehouse. So I'm lucky I can call here, but the Gatehouse closes at a certain time, and what am I going to do at midnight, for example? Well, who am I going to talk to? Well, I call a 24-hour helpline, like the Gerstein Center, like I talked about. Those places are open 24 hours a day. You know, there's always somebody out there to talk to. You know, they may not, if they're at all trained in what they're doing, they're not going to be telling you what to do. They just should just be sitting there listening to you and letting you speak how you feel. And it's their job, like even with these helplines I'm talking about, that is their job to do that. It's their job is to sit there and let you say what's going on with you and in your head, what's in your body, what's going on. Okay, another point here from Living With Abuse. Thank you. Self-care is so important. In fact, I didn't even realize it. It was self-care until I got into talking with two survivors on a regular basis. Enjoyment, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And I kind of had to learn that myself as well, being around other survivors. And yes, I can say all these. I can say these things that I had to learn for myself, to understand that, you know, well, one, I'm worthy of it, and two, you know, that I don't have, you know, just learning different things is important moving forward. You know, there's so many different ways and things you can do, but that's the beauty with the peer support, is that I'm able to come here and I'm able to talk about all this stuff at whatever level I feel like it. And I don't have to talk if I don't want to. You know, I could just come in and sit and listen if I want to. But folks, I hope you got something out of what I'm talking. I hope you got some good info about what you could be thinking or feeling. And again, all of what I've talked about here tonight does not necessarily that applies to you at all. You know, again, that's something you need to, something that a person needs to discover and research for themselves, and to see, well, all those points that I brought up about the seven stages, like I'm talking about, of the grief and the loss, where that applies to you, where it doesn't apply to you. And this is where journaling comes in really handy, that you, that when you are doing things, when you are in deep in thought, that you can write this stuff down and, you know, highlight it, do whatever, so that when you get into a bad day, that you can fall back and, or not even so much in a bad day, but you can go and you can look back on this stuff and, say, okay, this is what I'm thinking. This is what I'm feeling. So how can I change that and find a new direction of thought so that you don't feel that way? And I know it sounds really easy. Well, actually, it doesn't sound easy at all, but it's easy to say it, but it's actually, the hard part is doing it. And if you're able to do it with, well, you are able to do it. Everybody has the capacity to do it. It's just a question of taking the, you know, practice. As I've talked about for myself, I practice. I continuously have to practice to change these things. And yes, I fall back and I move forward. And I probably will continue to do so for however long it takes. But I refuse to give up on the context that, one, it was never my fault. And two, I am a human being. And three, I deserve it, as you deserve it. So, folks, I want you to take care. Have a great week. Also, keep in mind that on May the 11th, I have Tara Muldoon coming in as a guest on the Forgiveness Project, which I cannot wait to talk to her about, because we're talking about forgiveness tonight. And I'm really sure that that Tara will have some great insight on forgiveness, and I can't wait to talk to her. I got to read her book, which I got left with. Actually, Art gave it to me, and I can't wait to read it. And actually, I had a chance to even meet her, but at that time that she was here, she was in a meeting with Art. I just happened to be doing a class at Humber College at the time, so I was not able to speak with her. So, folks, take care, self-care. Remember some of the things I've talked about. And yes, one last comment about it, by living with abuse. Yes, practice makes perfect. We all have bad days, but in some respects, it makes us appreciate the good ones. Never feel it was really your fault at all. Absolutely. Great point. Thank you, Flower Child, for all your comments. I really appreciate that. And folks, have a great week. I'll be back next week. I'm not sure if I'll have a guest or not, but I'll know I'll be back with something to talk about in regards to what we deal with here at the Gatehouse. So, folks, have a great week. Self-care. Take care of yourselves. And have a great weekend coming up. Good night.